We've just come from a chapel service in which we had the privilege of hearing Reverend Dr. Paul M. Haribo, the Executive Secretary for Personnel of the Board for Missions of our beloved Synod. Now, as we gather in convocation, it shall be our privilege to hear the Reverend Dr. Edward A. Westcott, Jr., the Executive Secretary for the Board for Missions of our church. Dr. Westcott is a graduate of our sister seminary, Concordia Theological Seminary, in its Springfield days. He did his initial term of service in the church by working in the capacity of a missionary in Nigeria. After a tour of duty there, he became parish pastor in the Michigan district, where he also served the church in various capacities on the district level, including vice presidency of the district. From there, he went to Scottsdale, Arizona, to assume an exceptionally challenging parish ministry, and while there, was called upon also to serve on the Mission Study Commission of the Synod, was elected to serve on the Commission on Theology and Church Relations, and by election was removed from that commission to serve on the Board of Directors until he was removed from there by call into his present position. That should be enough to let you know that there is substance behind the person who now rises to speak to you about today's challenges in the work of the church. Dr. Westcott.
I keep looking over my shoulder to wonder, to find the gentleman that's being talked about. I really am very grateful that the Lord has used me in these ways. I take no credit for any of it, but have been delighted that he has privileged me to serve in our church and him in these various capacities, and especially now the one in which I am presently is the executive of the Board for Missions of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, largely and primarily responsible for the direction and the mission thrust of our church. I am not going to give you a sermon this morning. You've already heard one. Paul did an excellent job in setting before you what it's really all about. The Lord has commissioned us to go. And only those who are really excited about what he has done for them personally are those who can really go. And I assume at the outset that all of you here are among that type of alive in Christ, in love with Christ kind of person. And that you are ready to move out and to be his ambassador, his messenger, his herald, wherever he may send you. And as I gave some thought to how I would go about this little talk I am supposed to give you, I decided that I would not, as I said before, give you a sermon. But I would try to set before you the challenges as I see them, as the Lord is placing them before our church. Challenges not just out in the world, and that is always a danger. I have to be very careful of that, because I'm always moving out, and many of my problems deal with and challenges deal with the churches and the opportunities that lie outside of our country. But I am also responsible. My department is responsible for what is happening here in our country. And in the short time I've been in this office, I have been absolutely astonished and amazed and awed at the challenges that the Lord is opening to our church. I should really even broaden that to say the challenges the Lord is opening to all Christian churches. But since I'm not responsible for all Christian churches, but for this one, I will simply zero in on the challenges as I see them before us today, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I would maintain, gentlemen, and I better make sure I see no ladies, okay. I would maintain, gentlemen, oh, there is, thank you. All right. Ladies, that, oh, there's Gladys back there. I'm sorry, Gladys. Okay. I would maintain that we stand in a very unusual and a very challenging time in the New Testament era. I believe that there are peaks of urgency in throughout the history of the New Testament era. And I believe that we are at one of those peaks. For whatever the reason may be, the Lord is at work and he is moving. And doors are being opened. Shifts are taking place. New facts are becoming available to us. new means are being put at our disposal. But in all of this, it seems as though the world out there, including our own country, is ready. It's always been, but I just think that this is one of these peak urgency times. In our own country, for example, I am sure you are well aware, if you are not, you had better be, that over half of the population of this country is unchurched. In the state of Missouri, the percent is 46.9%. You ought to be aware of the fact that the large cities of our country are being depleted, and that the population of our country is moving into what is called the Sunbelt cities, and that major cities which once attracted people no longer attract. This has something to say about the challenge of our church. You should also know that in recent years, the trend in our country has been not to the suburbs or to the cities, but back to the rural areas. And we see here a tremendous challenge, a revitalization of our rural parishes that have simply been existing. Perhaps the need for new facilities, the expansion of facilities, but certainly a ministry to these people who are leaving the cities to take up residence in rural areas. In our own goals for the Mission Department of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, you should know that we have a goal of establishing throughout the districts of our church in North America, which includes Canada and Alaska, etc., 180 new congregations. Our church has been piddling around with 15 or 20 per year for the total of our church body in the past years. This year, by the grace of God, we're opening close to 80 new parishes. And next year, our goal is to sensitize the districts and the mission execs and all of the people of our church to open 180 new missions, to meet the challenge of the unchurched in this country. Now, that's going to take manpower, and that's going to take money. Keep that in your head. Because as we move outside of this country, the challenges around the world are really almost unbelievable. But they are so exciting that I am just absolutely delighted that I am in this position, and hope the Lord gives me enough strength and life to really become involved in helping our church meet these challenges. Where for years we have sat and have been content with what we have come to call a Lutheran presence in many areas, where we have sort of gone out with the philosophy that our job was to undergird and support whatever Christian denomination was at work, this no longer is even heard anywhere. I had the privilege when I first took office. I didn't look at it as a privilege at the time. I thought it was an absolute impossibility, where I had to leave the office from July the 22nd to September the 4th and make a trip to Liberia and New Guinea and spend 3.5 weeks in India. And I'm grateful the Lord did that, or arranged that for me. Because while I was in all of these places, I got a breath of fresh air that was simply invigorating. Everywhere I went, everyone I talked to, and I talked to all of the partner church presidents, because we all met together in New Guinea in the International Lutheran Conference in Papua New Guinea. All I heard was, the opportunities, give us manpower, give us money, because the Lord is opening doors and we want to walk through them. Korea is a typical example, where with 400 communicant members for years, all of a sudden, there is an explosion taking place. Our church, under the guidance of the Holy Spirit and the leadership that we presently have, and I am sure a lot of this has to do with Dr. G, the brother of one of the professors here, Dr. G, who's sitting back against the wall over there, that they see the opportunity, and they are going to plant 3 new churches per year for the next 10 years in Korea. Venezuela, for years, seemingly doing nothing if you check the statistical yearbooks. I'll be meeting this afternoon with the president of the mission, Reverend Douglas Johnstone, and he tells me that things are on the move, that opportunities are opening up, that they can preach and teach the gospel as never before. And this is going to take manpower and money. And then there are areas in the world where we are not. And this is the burden that rests heavily on me, and I would hope it rests heavily upon you. Not only the unchurched of this country, but there are 2,400,000,000 what are called hidden people in this world. That's not the total number that do not know Jesus Christ. But there are 2,400,000,000 people who have been virtually ignored because they are culturally and linguistically separated from the rest of the peoples of the world. Where our churches have been at work, where all Christian churches have been at work, we have not made the effort to reach out and go beyond, to move into another culture, to move into another language group. And they have been ignored. And yet they are souls for whom Christ died. And this will call for pioneer mission work again. Hard, rough, pioneer kind of mission work that we used to talk about 50 or 60 years ago. It is not going to be easy. But those people are precious souls, and others have ignored them. And I believe the Lord is opening the door for us. Let me give you an illustration of how the Lord works. Unless your eyes are wide open, you won't even see it. You won't even recognize the door cracking. When I was in Liberia, I was privileged to be in the presidential party. This was an Independence Day celebration. As a result of that, I had the opportunity to rub shoulders with ambassadors from all over the world. I was sitting at the president's table one night, eating supper with the party, and next to me was the ambassador from Zaire. Now, Zaire used to be the Belgian Congo, if you remember. And you remember, as it went through the throes of independence, it was a kind of a bloody affair. And there were a number of missionaries who died, etc., etc., etc. So I'm sitting next to this ambassador from Zaire, really not knowing quite what kind of a conversation I should carry on. You know, should I get beyond the weather or beyond, you know, what's happening here? Should I sort of really even enter into the whole area of Christian missions? But decided to do so. He seemed to be very friendly. And so I asked him a very dumb question, and I'll never do that again. I asked him, do you have any Christian missions in Zaire? Well, you know, that was the wrong question to ask anybody, no matter what their philosophy may be. But anyway, he took the question in stride very nicely and said to me, yes, we do have many Christian missions in Zaire. So then I took the opportunity to ask him, was there any need for another church body such as ours, Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, to come into Zaire to begin work? And he looked me square in the eye. And I don't want you ever to forget these words, because that's going to be the key, hopefully, in the years to come, in the direction in which our church goes. He said, if you are willing to do what the other denominations are not doing in my country, if you are willing to reach the hidden people of my country, the door is open. That means we would have to go back behind where anything has been done before. What he is saying to me then, and he expanded on this conversation later as we got in a little corner together, and said to me that the denominations that are presently there are working always where they have worked. They are content to work with the language groups in which they have worked. And they have refused to go beyond. And he says there are hundreds of thousands of my people who have not heard the gospel and discovered that he himself was a Christian, which was extremely fascinating, who have not heard the gospel of Jesus Christ because no one wants to go back there. Now, I maintain that this is an open door. That door is going to be investigated sometime, Lord willing, this year. But what it means when I put my foot into that door is that there is going to have to be the willingness on our part to supply the manpower and the money that's needed. There is no sense in going through a door and not being serious about it. And I could list for you, in just the short time that I have been in this office, these kinds of opportunities and these kinds of open doors. Let me just say one more. It's a very small one. Many people won't even see it as an open door. But word has come out that within a couple of years, Red China, where, what is it, half the population of the world is, Roy? Close, isn't it? 23%? Well, that's not too far off. I'll get these figures down, you know, better after a while. I haven't had a chance to do that kind of research and study. But anyway, so 23% of the world is locked away from Christ. There's no Christian work being done in that country. But word has come out that the doors are beginning to open for what? For trade. For expertise. They're going to be asking us for expertise as far as industry is concerned. Word has come out that they want to send 10,000 young Chinese to this country for education. Our campus pastors better get alerted to that. And they will be requesting, now this is not firm, this is all conjectures, things that I have picked up. They will be requesting 50,000 teachers of English from this country. Now many people wouldn't see that as an open door. I see it as a wide open door. I see it as an opportunity to train these teachers. Hopefully some of them would be our own LCMS people. How to conduct themselves in this society and under this kind of our government and still make a witness for Jesus Christ. Those pupils, students that are coming over here represent a tremendous challenge. So this is what we've got. We have got opportunity upon opportunity. Now what do I want to end up with? Because I have to shut up so you can have questions. I made a mistake at Fort Wayne of talking too long. But at any rate, what I want to end up with is this. I am not interested in questions that have to do where's the manpower coming from or where's the money coming from. Don't you ask me that, because I'll sit right down. Those are questions of faith to me. If the Lord is opening the door, He will supply the manpower and the money. We have too long not walked by faith as a church body. We have put ceilings on budgets. We have said you can only spend this much, as though we were telling the Lord exactly how much need there was, instead of letting Him show us the need. Manpower and money follow mission is my philosophy. I'm having a hard time getting this across, but I'm going to keep at it. Because that's the only way a church comes alive. It's when it starts to walk again by faith. What would have happened if Paul would have sat down after the Lord told him, get up and get out there and have a committee meeting? And decided whether or not, you know, how many men he needed and where he's going to get them from and how much money it was going to take him to make it. We'd still be in darkness, wouldn't we? We'd never gotten off the ground. We've done too much of this. Too much of sitting down and trying to figure out how, instead of walking in faith, believing that the Lord will supply. I think the enrollment in our seminaries this year is an answer already to the manpower need. And I believe in the years to come, the Lord will supply. And it isn't all ordained clergymen. The needs throughout the world are varied and many. And Dr. Herboth will talk, I won't take your speech away from you. Dr. Herboth will talk about that. But it's just as varied as the occupations in this country. But needs are there. And I firmly believe that if, as a church body, we once again become excited, quit staring at our navels, talking about the little bitty things that get us all excited and that we like to talk about because, you know, they keep us from doing the real thing we ought to be doing, and get out in this country and in the world and meet the challenges in faith that the Lord is laying before us. Now, I'll have time, I hope, for questions from any of you relative to any of this and whatever else you got on your mind. But I suppose maybe at this time, Dr. Herboth, you ought to talk to them about specific manpower needs that we have got for the coming year. Thank you.
I didn't want to walk up here too fast and cash in on my boss's applause. But, but I really am inspired and motivated myself by this dear brother and co-worker to new visions for mission. So I will have to say, you know, when you work in a structure like a synodical organization and work in a section of a department that is part of a large staff, you can imagine there are days when papers and letters and reports and things do pile up on the desk, and especially when you go out of town, you don't get at it. And I have had to learn, preacher, preach to thyself. There are many times I have preached on a text in mission festivals, you know, pray ye the Lord of the harvest, because the workers are so few and so on, and the needs are so great. I have found that need to pray more and more about this matter because the challenges and needs are indeed overwhelming, even when we begin to specify them on paper in dimensions that can be a suitable challenge for our particular church body, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And so for 1979, for example, we are listing manpower needs for 55 people. Now, among them are a variety of workers that will be needed, which would include nurses, doctors, and teachers, volunteer youth ministry people who are teaching English in Japan, and hopefully a similar kind of persons for Taiwan. And among them also, of course, the need for ordained clergymen, including new graduates from our seminaries. And so for this coming year, which would be of interest to you people particularly, we are looking for 18 people who are will be ordained or are pastors. And so for Ghana, for example, 3 people. Liberia, 1. Nigeria, among the Ekajuk people, 1. Korea, 2. Philippines, 4. Venezuela, 4. Central America and Panama, 3. And then there are specialized needs, among which will not be new graduates from our seminaries, a director of evangelism for the Lutheran Church Hong Kong Synod in Hong Kong, a qualified seminary professor, and then one to be a director of special education for reaching out to the deaf in Hong Kong. India, we need an Islamic studies consultant, an ordained clergyman who has a degree in this area, and we are going to be contacting him and recruiting him for this particular assignment at the Henry Martin Institute, which is an effort to understand the world of Islam and then communicate to the churches how to witness as Christians to the Muslim believer. It's a very challenging kind of assignment. And then we are hoping someday to get theological professors or trainers for a much-needed seminary in Taiwan. So those are some of the basic needs that we foresee this year. And it's been a pleasure to be in contact with a number of you already, such as last year and year before, and perhaps there'll be some new contacts today. I'll be here all day to meet with you individually. And later on, after the Christmas season and before spring comes, I'd like to meet with interested individuals and their wives, if they are married, for an additional interview time in depth. We had this experience down at Fort Wayne recently, and we are in contact with a goodly number of students there who feel that the Lord may be placing this burden on their heart, some of them for Spanish-speaking ministry here in the United States, or for reaching out to the American Indian or other specialized ministries, or for new mission stations, and then for these particular assignments overseas. And so, for example, if the Lord opens the door for us in Togo, which is next door to Ghana, in the northern area of this country, are the overflow of the Bimoba-speaking people. Such a person ought to have as a second working language French, so that he can communicate with government and citizens who grew up learning French when that was formerly a French colony. In Liberia, we are sending a business manager over this coming year who will relieve the missionaries of their secondary tasks so they can do the job for which they've been called and sent. The business manager will be stationed in the city of Monrovia, can do all the legwork and red tape work with government and with companies when it comes to importing supplies, doing the registration work, necessary paperwork, and buying of supplies, for example. This will keep the missionaries among the Mende-speaking people and the Bundi-speaking people when we reach out to them, because it's a treacherous trip from the north country into Monrovia when the roads are passable, and otherwise it requires a flight in by a special chartered flight. And such situations exist around the world, and it's a real challenge, and we hope we have time to meet with interested individuals today. I too want to allow time for questions, and so at this point we'll just sit down with this capsule of information. Thank you.
Let me get a cup of coffee first.
All right. Any questions about any phase of the work that is under the Board for Missions Department? Now, you have to understand something. While the work of North America is under my department, and I have a special secretary for this, in fact, he's got three under him, the work that is done in this country is largely carried on by the districts. Our job is to sensitize the districts to the challenges that lie within their jurisdiction, is to present them with new programs, to involve them in church growth principles, et cetera, et cetera. We are very concerned. In fact, if I remember correctly, I believe, where's Paul? In the budget. We have an item just for this. The whole question of the inner city and how do we sensitize congregations, you know, to their responsibility and the congregations out in the suburbs to their responsibilities on the inside. I can tell you for 8 years I was on the Michigan District Mission Board, was chairman of the Urban Study Committee, and this is an all, you know, I know the problems that exist in this whole area, and they are not easy, believe me. But we do have a part of our program zeroed in on that. But the districts are the ones that have to move. All we can do is push. Yes, sir. Okay, we have, at the present time, we have a mission training school which takes place after graduation. It lasts 7 weeks, this is correct. And if you're talking about a place like Venezuela, then you would, you either would spend some time here learning Spanish through, what's that language? Berlitz, I want to call it Berlin. Berlitz language course, you know, but then when you get into Venezuela, you would spend a year or better, depending upon what their program is, in becoming acculturated and becoming fluent in the language. You bring up a subject that's very close to my heart, and I have some ideas which I think are important and are good. I'm not so sure that everybody else thinks that way, but I keep trying. I firmly believe that if that's a cop-out expression, I believe that in the core courses at the seminary, there ought to be courses in anthropology, cross-cultural evangelism, linguistics. I think these things ought to be built in so that those who from the very first year have just a feeling that they might like to go into perhaps work outside of our country. This would in no way obligate them to do so, but at least could take these courses. And certainly, for a pastor in this country, how much better equipped you'd be with a good course in anthropology and a good course in cross-cultural evangelism, because you got the same thing in this country, you know, going on. So these courses built in so that you have the academics done, you know, by the time, you know, and even built into it, and the difficulty here is that I know you guys have to earn money during the summer, but built into this would be, if you really were serious, going to a linguistic school like in Norman, Oklahoma, or Minot, North Dakota, the SIL, and picking up in 2 summers the linguistic expertise needed, for example, to go into Togo and reduce a language to writing. Because, see, a great deal of these hidden people also are involved with non-written languages. You know, there's just no way you can communicate. And this has to be done. And I think we need to re-examine, you know, our whole course structure so that this is built into it. Now, I've been told it's pretty hard to get anything into a core I don't even know whether I know what that word means, but I use it because it sounds good, into a core course of seminary and all, but that's the battle I'm at the present time involved in. And then after you graduate, then there would be perhaps a two-week, what I would like to call a retreat kind of setting, in which I would gather all of those who were going out together, we would do some Bible study, we would get to know each other, and then we would learn how to teach the Bible. I don't think anything has changed since I graduated from the seminary. I never knew how to teach it when I got out. But how to teach the Bible, I probably got some profs here, I shouldn't have said that. I said it, so there it is. All right. But to build an esprit de corps kind of thing. But at the present time, we don't have that. What we have is the seven-week course in which you pick up cross-cultural understanding, a history of missions, and a few other things like this, and then pick up your language either through Berlitz or down at the field where you're going. That's where it sort of is now. Oh, at Cuernavaca, Mexico, you would go to learn Spanish. Thank you. He's been in there a lot longer than I have. We want both, okay? I think Dr. Herbold made it very clear. There are going to be some positions that will require, experience in the parish ministry, etc. And there will be those that can go out right from the SEM. It will be a combination of both. And you may have picked this up from Fort Wayne, because this is exactly what I said. And some people only half hear, they only hear what they want to hear. It is not that the burden of all of this rests upon the new graduates. It's got to be a burden that is on the whole church. And that would be men from the field with experience in a special area or an expertise in a special area, as well as new graduates. Oh, absolutely. You're talking about two separate things. One is, if you are called to go to work in a partner church, all right? We have partner churches around the world. They're organized churches. They have their own presidents. If you're called to work there, you would be called probably in a special area or for a special task, and that could be the training of nationals through theological education by extension. It could be perhaps opening up a new area for that church. But involved in all of our partner churches are the training of national pastors and evangelists. Now, the other side of the coin is, if you go, for example, to Liberia, where we do not have a partner church, this is a brand new mission. There is no organization. There, your job will be to be the evangelist. That is, to bring the message of Christ to those people. And through the work of the Holy Spirit, plant church. Church and churches in this area that are in themselves the instruments that move out. And so at the very same time that you are preaching the word which produces the faith, you are training evangelists. But your primary task will be to preach the word. Anything else? Yes, sir. Sorry. Oh, excellent question. Gives me the opportunity to get something else off my chest. The mission in Liberia has received criticism from many sources. And it received criticism because we have been informed, that is, through the press, that there was a Lutheran church already there, and that they were unhappy they were coming in, blah, 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 blah. Be that as it may, I was not involved in the history. But I can tell you this much, and I will stake my credibility and my character and my job on it. Where we are working in Liberia, nobody else is working or wants to work. Now that's where it ends up. And I don't care who criticizes whom. Part of what I am committed to in this job is that we will not move into an area where another Christian church is doing an effective job. I don't care whether it goes by the name of Baptist or Episcopalian or what it goes by. We will move into areas where no one is working, and we are in an area in Liberia where no one is working. And if those who printed part of Bishop Payne's speech would have printed the last paragraph of his speech, which they obviously didn't do because it wouldn't have served their gossipy ends, they would have known that he also said, in spite of the fact they were not too happy that the LCMS is coming in, and that's, you know, that's very human. Why should he be happy? He's the only one. He ran the Liberian show for a while in a narrow strip all by himself. He says, we cannot as a church body go where they're going. Now, if they'd have printed that, then there wouldn't have been anything to print, obviously. So, you know, I am telling to you, I am committing our whole mission program to the fact that we will not move in where any other Christian church is working, and Liberia is no exception to that. Period. I should dispel all rumors and all gossip and everything else. We haven't got the time, gentlemen, to mess around. You know, there was a hand back here that I missed before. Right. Okay. Right. Want me to tell him about it, Paul? All right. First of all, as Dr. Hareboth indicated, you know, he's been in this office for how many years? 15 years. And, you know, you get in the kind of a rut. So my coming in did a lot of things, including the fact that I want the whole recruitment program reanalyzed. I want posters in every congregation with little rip-off sheets, with the description on the poster of the jobs that we, you know, we're talking about around the world and in this country, in every congregation. I want full-page ads in the Reporter and in the Lutheran Witness. We got to pay for it. I want ads in every magazine that carries anything to do with missions, if it's possible. You know, what our needs are, specific, not just a lump sum, we need 55 people. I mean, lay them out and say it, so that we are going to reach out and do, it, hopefully and prayerfully, an effective job. I can't sit up here and say, you know, the Lord told me to pray, he'd send them. I agree, but he also told me I got to do something too. And we have got to get the word out. It doesn't do me much good to pray if nobody out there knows what I'm praying about. So, to get the word out to the congregations in every way possible is what we're going to try to do. Yes? We'll see what we can do. Part of my frustration is that all of this stuff should have been done yesterday. You know, it'll come. It'll come. We'll try to get something out anyway to all the congregations. Great. Good suggestion. Now, over here. Mm-hmm. Well, all I know is that this conference will meet in 4 years again. It is not an annual conference. It meets in 4 years. The Missouri Synod basically pays the freight for all of these presidents to get together. In 1981 or 82, it's going to be in Guatemala. I, quite honestly, don't really know what it serves, except that it was extremely valuable to me. It would have cost me $50,000 to visit each one of these in their country. Okay? They all get together. And that's where the value is to me. And I'm glad they hold them every 4 years, because then I can, you know, get together with them and get locked in individual one-on-one conferences with them. They do serve, I think, also as a kind of a strengthening We had, for example, at this conference, we had some excellent papers. The three solas were delivered by different partner church presidents. And they were, you know, analyzed and torn apart and all that sort of thing. And we did come up with two documents, which were printed in the Reporter, I believe. But it has no official standing, is what I guess I'm trying to say to you. It is a sort of a voluntary conference. Its purpose, I do not believe, has ever been very clearly defined. It has some side benefits. But if we're going to look to that as the enabling arm of formation, no, it isn't going to happen. I should also say to you, in answer to your question, the thought just crossed my mind about recruitment. This July, we have a Missouri Synod, you know, Synodical Convention is in St. Louis. And this has been given over to missions. That's the theme, God opens doors. And we are going to do everything in our power to highlight all of these needs. We're going to have, we've got two big rooms where we're going to have a mission fair, which has never gone on before, but we're going to see how it works. But we will then have all the partner church presidents here. You will be able to talk with them. And they will be, you know, be making speeches. And hopefully through this, the whole recruitment and the needs will get out across the country. I am hoping and praying that this will be an inspirational and joyous convention, you know, where we really, as again, as a church body, are excited about moving out. So that's another big area where we'll be working. Anything else? Yes, sir.
Can you perhaps elaborate a little bit on what you mentioned before, as far as subsidizing districts to meet within our own country for service to cross-cultural groups, especially ethnic groups, and places in the city where other churches, perhaps in foreign countries, are not working, and where we as church bodies.
Okay.
Some of the strategy on this.
Yeah. All right. There are a number of things come to mind. Last August, our department paid for and organized a church growth conference for all district presidents. Okay, this was a 3 or 4 day conference, I believe, in which the district presidents were exposed in depth to the church growth principles. Okay, secondly, what I did not say to you before is that we do have a man on the staff whose special responsibility is campus ministry, but underneath of that also is the Hispanic, the Asian, the ethnic groups. He works with the districts in particular in sensitizing them to the opportunities that are there. For example, the 400,000 Koreans sitting out on the West Coast, I believe is a correct figure, isn't it? Okay, Dr. G and I have had some talks on this. We have worked along the lines of what can be done by way of a colloquy program, this sort of thing. We are deeply involved in much of this. And the sensitizing of the districts comes when, for example, we're ready to do something in Los Angeles or San Francisco, we'll be working through their board for missions or their mission board. And that's how we sensitize them. Our man, my man, will be there.
Well, been great to be well. You're so quiet. Gee. Right, Dr. Soflo.
I want to thank you and Dr. Herbold for taking the time out of a busy schedule to come out here and address the secondary community. I can tell you that these two men and all of our staff people downtown are exceedingly busy, not in the ordinary office work so much, but the travel that is required of them in their diverse responsibilities all over the world. Requires an awful lot of stamina, time, and energy. I had the privilege this summer traveling about 2 weeks in Africa with Dr. Westcott, which was quite an experience. As a member of the board, I must say I'm happy that we finally got this position filled with such a dynamic individual. And everything that Dr. Westcott says about the enormous opportunities, he has not resulted in any kind of hyperbole. In West Africa, it is unbelievable how many hundreds of thousands of people are owing to the gospel preaching and evangelism work, just waiting for people to come and teach them about the Savior. So thank you very much, Paul. And
you're welcome. I just have one regret. I was able, when I was in Fort Wayne, to stay with Dr. Herbold and meet with those students whom he will be interviewing. I simply cannot do so today. The president, as I told you, of Venezuela is in my office, and I have an all-afternoon meeting scheduled with him. But I would, you know, pray the Lord's rich blessings upon all of your thinking. You're here, obviously. Not all of you want to jump over into some other kind of culture or some other kind of land, but you are here because you are extremely interested and on fire. I would pray for the Lord's work, whether it's here or abroad. And I would, you know, really urge you to meet with Dr. Herboth if you have any interest at all, and he can at least put your name on a list and we can continue communications there. So that I appreciate the opportunity to have been with you and for your absolute unbelievable attentiveness. Nobody went to sleep that I saw. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for being here, and we surely regret more than you do that you won't be able to be here this afternoon, and yet are so happy that so capable a person as Dr. Herboth will be on the scene. For your information, in case you haven't read the daily announcements or the bulletin board posters accurately, Dr. Herboth will be in this room from 1 to 5 this afternoon to confer with you about any and all of your tentative interests with respect to missions. We've even provided that the person whose free time would allow him to come at 3 or thereabouts should not have to debate between going for coffee and coming to see Dr. Herboth. There will be a little coffee here at 3 for those who have to arrive at that time. Don't underestimate the working of our Lord through His Word and through His other people on each of us, His people. Some of you may already know the anecdote which I should like to relate as a closing for our occasion this morning, but some of you may not. Last spring, one of our candidates was extended a call to become a missionary in Nigeria. His name is John Miller. Until January of last year, John had no idea at all that he might serve in extraterritorial missions. But it was in a placement interview in my office that the subject arose. And it was at that time that John, despite the exceptional closeness that exists between him and his wife, learned for the first time that she had been praying ever since high school days that she might have the opportunity to serve with her husband in extraterritorial missions. And from that time on, from that January day forward, things just moved in so marvelous a way that at the present time we can say that John is winding up training in at Fuller, I guess, isn't he, Dr. Herboth, and will soon be leaving for Nigeria. Can you say about when that might be?
Or, visa.
Yeah, visa problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's, to me, a rather awe-inspiring thing, to believe that in our homely little campus group here, you know, something as marvelous and amazing as that could happen. But we really believe that it can happen over and over again. So as you seek to see your place in the church, despise no place whatever, but be open to the manner in which the Lord might call you. Thanks for coming.